Greetings, my name is Yitzchak Et Shalom, and it is my honor and pleasure to study Megillat Ruth, the Book of Ruth, together with you via these podcasts. The podcast you are about to hear was originally recorded and sent out via the internet in the year 2007. It is now being resent so that in this series we will complete our study of Megillat Ruth from chapter 1 through the end of chapter 4. I hope that you enjoy, and may we continue to grow in our study of Torah together.
Hello, and welcome back to our continuing series of the study of Megillat Ruth. We are now at beginning chapter 2, and just to quickly recap, we now found Ruth and Naomi. Naomi bereft of her two sons and her husband, and Ruth, former daughter-in-law, has joined her in her return to Beit Lechem. And now at the beginning of chapter 2, we are introduced to another protagonist of our story. Notice how the introduction of this hero is parallel in some sense, or at least is similar to the introduction of the dramatis personae in the beginning of the book. As I pointed out in the first session, the opening line introduces a man and his wife and two kids and no names. And the suspense, who are they? And then we're given their names and we attend to the meaning of their names. In the same way here, we hear that Ula Naomi Modan Leisha. Naomi has a particular person who is familiar through her husband, in other words, someone who is a friend of her husband. Ish Gibor Chayil. We'll get back to what this term means in a minute. Yimishpachat Elimelech. So he's a person who's also from the family of Elimelech. So he is both a family friend, and a member of the family. And then we're told, Ushmo, what's his name? Boaz. Boaz, is this fellow's name, and of course he's going to play a critical role in the whole story. What does the name mean? You note that the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Tanakh, reads his name not as Boaz, but Booz. What is Booz? Booz means strength is in him. And that is belied already by the description. The first thing we hear about him, besides his being a familiar friend of the family, is Gibor Chayil. Now this phrase, Gibor Chayil, is one that shows up several times in Tanakh. And interpreting it will depend really on two different words. One of them is gibor, which generally means manly or mighty, powerful perhaps. And the other is chayil. And chayil is often understood to be having something to do with war or with fighting. Ish chayil, anshei chayil, etc. Phrases that may refer to battle, in which case gibor chayil is a description of this fellow's military experience, his physical might. He's a courageous person. Two problems with this is that, first of all, Gibor Chayil, or word Chayil associated with the description of a person, does not necessarily mean army. The second thing is that his being a strong, valorous fighter plays no role whatsoever in the rest of the text. And therefore, we would have no interest in knowing about that, about him. Therefore, we have to turn to other sources. Check the concordance and see how the word chayil is used, anshei chayil, throughout Tanakh. You find that it has another meaning, which has to do with wealth. And it's a meaning that's going to show up several times in Megillat Rut. Gibor chayil, asei chayil, we're going to see that in the last chapter, is the blessing that's given to Boaz when he ends up marrying Ruth. Chayil is wealth. So Gibor Chayil would now mean a wealthy person. However, there is also the intimation that he is some sort of a powerful person, because otherwise you would call him not a Gibor Chayil, but an Ish Chayil, a man of wealth. Why is he called a Gibor Chayil? Again, foreshadowing, park it away, put it in the back of your head, and later on in the Megillah we will somehow get a sense, we will see this power, this strength that he has come out in, shall we say, an unconventional manner. All right, so the fellow's name is Boaz. So Boaz, strength is in him. He is a gibor, a strong person. He is a gibor chayil, which strictly speaking means a man of wealth. And he is a member of Elimelech's family, and he is also someone who was friendly with Elimelech. Now, put all of those together, and we fully expect something to happen, which is, here is Boaz, a wealthy man, lives in Beit Lechem, member of the family, knows the family, strong person, and we know that Naomi has returned, and we know that her return is a matter of public record, because the women of the town said, Hazot Naomi, as we saw in the last session, the end of chapter 1. So we fully expect that at this point Boaz would turn around and say, Naomi, my kinsman, the widow of my friend and my family member, you're poor, come, I'll take care of you. After all, I'm a Kippur Chayil. And instead, we are disappointed to find out that is not the method through which Boaz will end up playing a saving role for this family. We are a little bit disappointed. Now, the mention of Boaz seems to be out of place, because we ended chapter 1 with bringing Naomi and Ruth into Beit Lechem. Chapter 2 will pick up with the interaction between Ruth and Naomi and their struggle to stay alive. But before doing so, we have a mention of Boaz, which means this is a classic case of foreshadowing. We'll see how Boaz's role plays out quite soon. Vatomer Ruta Moaviyah el Naomi. In the last session, I pointed out that every time that Ruth is mentioned as Ruta Moaviyah, we have to ask the question, we already know she's a Moaviyah, a Moabite woman, why mention it again? So we'll see how this plays. Vatomer Ruta Moaviyah el Naomi. Ruth HaMoaviyah said to Naomi, Elachana Sadeva Alakota Bashibolim Achar Asharim Sachain Be'inav. As I mentioned in the last podcast, at harvest season, the poor have all sorts of rights within the field of the farmer. And I also mentioned that it was more than likely that particular poor people would identify themselves and hang on to one particular farmer's field, so they would have a familiarity and a knowledge, a familiarity with each other and know who was there. Ruth displays some familiarity and some ignorance about the laws of Leket when she says, I will go out, the words she uses are, Elchana hasadeh, I will now go, the word na in Tanakh means now, I will now go to the field. Which field? Va'alakota vashibolim, and I will collect among the sheep, which means she's familiar with the fact that poor people sometimes could be found in the fields collecting discarded seeds or discarded sheaves. Achar sharam sachem beinav, but she makes it contingent upon finding favor in the eyes of him. Who's the him? The him is whoever the owner of that field is. In other words, she says to Naomi, I'm going to go out to the fields. I will find a field where I can be in the good graces of the owner, where he'll let me in, do a kindness for me. And I will go pick up the discarded sheaves. Now, what's surprising here is Naomi's near silence. At this point, Naomi should have been the one to recommend this. If Naomi herself doesn't have recourse to family members who can help, and Naomi herself is perhaps too old to work, she can suggest to Ruth where Ruth could work. Instead, Naomi sits and does nothing. And it's Ruth who initiates the idea. And even this idea is one that Naomi could have come up with and said, listen, Ruth, we have rights here as poor people. And perhaps Naomi would even say, I remember as the wife of the wealthy landowner Elimelech, having poor people come into the field at harvest season and collect. So we can now do that. She says nothing. Ruth is the one who evidently observes this behavior among the poor and says, I guess I have some opportunity. I'll go. I'll make nice with someone. I'll go into his field. And Naomi's words are not what we would at least hope at this point she would say is, Ruth, that's great that you have this initiative, but you don't need to make nice. He has to let you in. Instead, what does she say? L'chi viti, go my daughter. Naomi doesn't give her a blessing, doesn't direct her, doesn't give her any instructions or any information. Simply she says go, and it's almost as if Ruth is asking permission to go, and Naomi is granting it, but not with a lot of enthusiasm. So what happens? Now the Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk Bet, verse 1 and verse 2 collide. Verse 1 introduced Boaz. verse 2, has Rut going out to collect in some field. Vatelech vatavo vatlaket pasadeh. We'll talk about that sequence in a moment. Acharei hakotzri. So what happened? She went, she came, and she collected in the field. Now, we don't know which field this is. So she went to a particular field, and she evidently felt comfortable going in, or nobody threw her out. So she went and collected following the harvesters. So in other words, the harvesters would walk, and she would walk in back of the harvesters and pick up what they had dropped. Vayikar mikreha, the text is saying, and her happenstance happened to be. In other words, she just happened to come into Chalkata Sadelu Boaz, field that belongs to Boaz, Asher mishpachat Elimelech. And again, the text underscores that Boaz is from Elimelech's family. Now, what's going on in this verse? So first thing is that the text is again underscoring the fact that there is a responsibility that exists here between Boaz and the family of Elimelech. Boaz is not yet attended to. And perhaps, Vayikar mikreha, it just so happened, which is certainly being said tongue-in-cheek within the context of Tanakh, because in the context of Tanakh, very little just happens, and it's quite clear from all the attention paid to specialness of Rut, and to who Boaz is, and how Boaz is related, etc., that this is no coincidence whatsoever. So the text is almost saying a tongue-in-cheek. It just so happened, wink-wink, that she goes into Boaz's field, that here the text is telling us this is how divine providence is arranging for Boaz to fulfill his commitment, his obligation, which is to take care of his family. So that's where she ends up. Now the second piece is, to go back to the first words, vatelech vatavo vatlaket. We generally assume and relate to the written text as exactly that. In Jewish tradition, we refer to Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh, the written text, which chiefly and almost exclusively refers to the 24 books of the Tanakh, and Torah Shebaalpeh, the oral tradition, most of which is recorded in the books of the Talmud and the Midrashim, etc. And we generally assume that the oral tradition is essentially an oral art, and as such, considerations of memorization and of parallel construction and of easy terms to remember, and even of including terms which don't fit the local circumstance but are part of a normal sequence, the Yerushalmi refers to as a Shivas Leishna, are part of the oral tradition. Conversely, we think of the written tradition as being exactly that, where we would not expect to hear alliteration, we would not expect to hear homonym, we would not expect to hear things that are essentially of an oral experience, but rather it's a written and a graphic experience. And there are places in which the rabbis discuss the graphology of the text and the way that sends a message, the way certain poems are written, the way that they're physically structured or graphically structured on the page. Nonetheless, we have to recognize that the written Torah is also an oral experience, and hearing it as such. And there are many, many examples of where the written word, because we recognize that it's being read out loud, takes on certain features, a certain meter that it might have in the poetry. Even to the extent that there are certain words that when read publicly, we substitute them with less harsh words, as an example in chapter 28 of Deuteronomy. And as such, we recognize that there are many, many instances where the style of the written word is engineered based on considerations of the auditory experience. And one example of that, which we're encountering now, is an example where there is a series of verbs which are presented without subject, at least as a separate word, without direct object, without adverb, just verb, verb, verb. And a classic example of this is the last verse in chapter 25 of Bereshit, of Genesis. And of course, we always come back to Bereshit, go back to the beginning. When Jacob, buys the birthright from Esav, his brother, for the food, after the deal is consummated, Yaakov gives Esav some food. What does the verse say? Yaakov Natan Esav Lachem Mazid Arashim. He gave bread and the lentil stew. And Vayochal, Vayesht, Vayakom, Vayelech, Vayivez, Esavet HaBechorah. Literally, he ate, he drank, he got up, he walked, and he degraded the birthright. Now, the way that the text has it in Hebrew is you have five verbs written one after another. And this is not coincidental, this is very deliberate. And the reason for it is the text is trying to give us a description of Esav as being somebody who acts with impetuosity, who acts without thinking, who acts rashly. He eats, he drinks, he gets up, he walks, he grades, doesn't stop at any point to think about what he's doing. And of course, that is what he's done. He's thrown away something of tremendous value for lunch. And we, of course, have little regard for his disregard and for his behavior. Well, the same thing happens here, but with very much the opposite result. When we read about Ruth, we read about someone who comes, she walks, she comes, she collects. She's all business, goes straight to work, doesn't stop, doesn't dilly-dally. You get the impression of somebody who's very diligent and goes straight to the job. And we're going to hear about this very soon from the testimony of the supervisor. But this works to Ruth's credit. Ruth is somebody who is presented not only as very kind and very loyal, as we saw in the first chapter, but here is somebody who is a very diligent worker. All right, so let's see. Came and she walked and she came and she collected. Good. Now in the next verse, v'hine voaz bami bit lechem. It's important at this point to point out something about the word v'hine. The word hine, which shows up plenty of times in the Tanakh, behold, always indicates some sort of a surprise. Something that's not necessarily expected. So here they're working, v'hine boaz bami bit lechem. Boaz suddenly shows up in the field from bit lechem. Now I have to talk a little bit about the area. The area where this part of the story, the rest of the story, from here on in, will take place, is around the city of Beit Lechem, not far from present-day Bethlehem. Beit Lechem is an area that, at least at this time, was surrounded by grain fields. That's quite clear. How is it clear? Because the town that is in the middle is called Beit Lechem. Lechem may mean bread. It may also mean food in the generic sense. Plenty of examples of how that means. How that meaning is ascribed, but it seems to be from all the descriptions in Tanakh that Beit Lechem really is, the meaning is bread. Why would a town? By the way, this is not the only Beit Lechem. There are at least two other Beit Lechems in Israel. One in Zvulun, one in Binyamin. Binyamin, north of Jerusalem, is Zvulun way further, much further in the north, in the lower Galil. Why would a place be called Beit Lechem? It's very simple. It's an area that's surrounded by grain fields, wheat fields, and barley fields, then the farmers naturally find some local centralized place where they're going to come in and trade and process the wheat and have it milled and perhaps even have it made into fine flour and perhaps even baked, and that will be the center. Now, Boaz, as we have already been told, is a wealthy person. So Boaz is not out at the field to crack a dawn. Ruth is already there, and there are already harvesters there. Boaz isn't there. Boaz is in Beit Lechem. Why is Boaz in Beit Lechem? So one explanation may be that Boaz is a wealthy man, doesn't need to get up so early. He can come later on in the morning. Possibility number two is that Boaz, of course, is sitting in shul, and he's davening, and he's studying, and perhaps he's acting as a judge, and perhaps he's acting as a community leader, and then he comes to the field later on in the morning. Possibility three is that Boaz is taking care of pieces of the business that take place in town, and then comes out to see his field. However it may be, here comes Boaz suddenly. Boaz ba mi Beit Lechem. Suddenly Boaz comes from Beit Lechem, and this is already mid-morning, as we will see. This is not yet midday, but it is well past the beginning of the morning, as will all become clear in the next few psukim. So he immediately greets the harvesters. How does he greet them? God is with you. And he greets them with God's name. And this is the source, the Mishnah at the end of the Brachot, the last Mishnah Brachot, says this is the source that we from whence we know that a person should greet another person with God's name. And what do they say back? Vayomru lo, ivrachcha Adonai. And they say back, God should bless you. Now this is, as I pointed out in the opening shiur, in the opening podcast to Ruth, this is one of the features of Ruth. God's name is on everybody's lips. Everybody's blessing everybody else and always using God's name. And this is, of course, a fine thing, a wonderful thing. And it's very much in contrast with the book of Shoftim, where God is very present, but not necessarily on people's lips. And now, after he's greeted them, he turns to them and says, Vayomer Boaz l'na'aro. He says to his lad, who is this lad? Hanitzav ala kotzrim, the one is who's supervising the harvesters. Now what that means here is that Boaz has a group of harvesters who may be his regular workers every year during the harvest season, and maybe that he hired them specifically for this season. They may be extended family members or local poor who he's given jobs to, we don't know. But he refers to them later as na'arim, as young men. And one young man, a na'ar, which by the way may not say much about age, but it says something about stature, is the supervisor. So he says to the na'ar who has an itzav ala kotzrim, who was supervising them, who was overseeing them, he says, lemi ha'na'ara hazot. Now, the lamed in the beginning of that first word is very telling. He doesn't say mi ha'na'ara hazot, who is this young girl? He says, to whom is this young girl? To wit, who does she belong to? Now that could be interpreted three different ways, and it would all really depend on one thing. It would depend on what Ruth looked like. It could mean, who does she belong to, meaning whose daughter is she? It could mean, who does she belong to, meaning whose wife is she? Or it could mean, who does she belong to, whose slave is she? At no point does he ask about her own identity, but rather her relational identity. Who is she associated with? So if she looks very young, which is highly unlikely because she was already married 10 years and some time has passed, then he might say, Lemi Anarazot, who is her father? More possibly, he may look at her and see somebody who is likely a married woman and saying, whose wife is she? But then the phrasing is a little bit strange. Lemi Aisha is what we would expect. So rather, the preferred way of understanding his question is, Lemi Anarazot, whose slave is she? And why does he see her as a slave girl? Well, the first thing that happens is, again, I'm suggesting, very likely there was a set group of poor people who attached themselves to a field, which means Boaz would know who was poor. This girl is surprised. He's never seen her before. So this is a new girl. The second thing is that she very likely is dressed in poor clothes. And as a poor person, is probably associated with some household. And because perhaps she does not look Jewish, she may look like a Moavia, like a foreigner, so therefore he assumes that she's some sort of a servant. The answer that he gets takes us in some very interesting directions. What does he say? Fellow says, Vayomar Nara Nisav ala Kotzrim Vayomar, is what he said. Na'ara Moaviyahi. She is a Moavi girl. Now that's something to say about a woman who's been married 10 years. But, of course, maybe he doesn't know that. Hashava im Naomi miste Moab. Now, Na'ara Moaviyahi reminds us of a phrase that we remember again from the book of Bereishit. When the butler is asked by Pharaoh, when the butler comes before Pharaoh because he thinks he has a solution to Pharaoh's frightening dreams, he says, aha, I was in prison and there was what with me, a Na'ar Ivri, a Hebrew young man, Eva the Saratabachim, who was also a slave. And we understand that phrase to be quite demeaning. Even though he's promoting Yosef, he's doing so with sort of a sneer. Now, he's a kid, he's an Ivri, he's a slave. Here we almost hear that same sneer that this supervisor is saying, she's a Na'ara Moaviyah, she's a Moabite girl. And we don't hear much praise in there. And then he says something that is really equivocal. He says, who returned with Naomi from the field of Moab. Now, on the one hand, we could say, aha, look at this loyal girl who came back with Naomi. She must be a good person, which is the story we know. On the other hand, one could interpret it and say, look at this opportunistic girl. She's taking advantage of the fact that Naomi's alone, and she's hitching a ride with her and trying to come into our community that way, which may make her somewhat of a less welcome character. But that, of course, would not explain how she got onto the field, why the supervisor didn't throw her out. So now we're going to hear something else about him. Vatomer, she said, this is still the supervisor reporting. Alakota nava asafti va'omarim. She had said to me, I will now collect and gather among the sheaves, achare ha-kotsrim, after the harvesters. That's all she said. And now, and you have to admit that these are words of praise, whether it's all praise or whether this is praise in spite of himself, he says she came and she has stood from the morning until now. So that tells us that this is not now first thing in the morning, it's a while. And he says, Zeshivta bayit ma'at. This is a phrase which all the commentaries have a problem with. The simplest read of it is, she hasn't sat down much. In other words, since morning, she's been here standing and collecting, and she has not sat down much. Which means that it is already late in the morning. We'll see that it's before the midday break, but it's already late in the morning, and she has impressed this supervisor by her diligence. Now, what's so impressive about that? And the rabbis, by the way, asked the question, why is it that Boaz noticed Ruth? So the simplest explanation is the one I gave, which is that she was a new face. But the rabbis suggest that there was something about the way that Ruth was working. So in one of the explanations, that she was working in a way that demonstrated much dignity and modesty, the way that she would lean over to pick up the seeds. Another way to read it would be that she demonstrated much diligence. Now, why is that so surprising? I'm going to say something that's politically incorrect, which almost always means that it's accurate. I mean that as a joke, but something that's not very popular to say, but something that nonetheless seems to be true, which is that when you look at the world of poverty, often, not always, and there are many exceptions to this and many other causes, but often chronic poverty is accompanied with a certain amount of indolence and an unwillingness to put in hard work on a regular basis without immediate gratification. This is a difficulty. It's a challenge. Why is this surprising? Because we would fully expect, based on that and based on what we experience, that the poor would come and collect, and they might come a little late, and they would collect what they collect, and then they'd go home. What about tomorrow? I'll come tomorrow and collect. What about the winter? And here we have Ruth, who seems to be just a woman on her own, and she's been collecting all day. And we'll find out at the end of the day how much she collects. It's a tremendous amount. So this is somebody who does not have the style of somebody who is a poor person. In other words, she doesn't have she collects in a manner very, very different than what we're expected to see, which is what draws his attention. And that's indeed what the supervisor says, and he's impressed with the fact that she has been collecting with such tremendous ardor and diligence. Now, what we're going to get to in the next podcast is going to be a dialogue between Boaz and Ruth. And this dialogue will eerily reflect and mirror the dialogue between Naomi and Ruth. And we're going to see that within the text, Naomi and Boaz seem to develop parallel relationships, which ultimately in the third chapter are going to be one of a sequential relationship with Ruth, where Ruth is going to pass, if you will, from the domain of Naomi to the domain of Boaz, but will remain in some sort of limbo until the fourth chapter. This is something that's created, that's affected by the device of the parallel dialogue. And just to get a sense of from the very beginning, Vayomer Boaz el Ruth. All right, so the first thing is Boaz comes up to Ruth, and he says, Halo shamat biti. Halo shamat, have you not heard, which in this sense can't mean what it says, because he hasn't said anything yet, so it must mean, please listen to me. But what's the first thing he calls her? Biti. Now, we're very comfortable with this. Somebody who we later discover is an older man, it's a younger woman, and he did say he speaks to her in a term of endearment, biti. My daughter, it's very nice. But if you think about it within the context of what's happening here, it's a little bit forward. And yet, what he knows and what she knows are very different things. What she knows is she's come into a field where they've allowed her to collect. And as far as she knows, that's the critical obstacle to pass. And now the owner of the field has showed up and he seems to be paying attention to her. She doesn't know where that attention is going to lead. he might come up to her and say, what are you doing here? Get out. On the other hand, what he knows is that this is somebody who has come with Naomi to whom he perhaps owes some sort of a debt, and now it's his opportunity to repay it. How he does so, we will see, beginning with his request of Ruth, in which everything gets turned around. But the first glimmer of hope that we get for that is when he calls her BT, which to us, the reader, immediately brings us back to Naomi's words, L'chiviti, with the words with which she sent Ruth on this mission of survival to collect. We should have a wonderful Shabbos. We'll pick up next week.